copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
When you came here this morning, or when you hear the term learning community, what comes to mind? What is your experience of learning community? Let me know, because the word's starting to be used a lot. So what do you think a learning community is? Let me ask you guys. Good. So the first one was this idea that you're a group, you're all kind of separate, you should have a learning community to bring you together and share things. And the second one, you made up some good points there around a common purpose or a common thing. All right, so this is a great point, that learning community certainly isn't something exclusive to the church or to ministry. It's been used in business and certainly started in education. I'll talk about that. When that example, how often did those people meet?
I would say weekly.
Weekly, okay. All right, so that's a good, we'll talk about timing here in a minute. That's a great point. The term is getting used a lot. I actually met a guy here from... is LaBrie, is that Francis Schaeffer's, right? And he said, and I was introduced to, oh, here's Tom McGee's an expert in learning communities. And this guy said, oh, I'm from LaBrie, we've been called a learning community, you know, as a LaBrie Institute, kind of over the years. And so there's a lot of, what does that mean? Let me give you a little of my background, and then I'll get into the meat of what you're here for. I started my spiritual walk. I was raised, my father was in the military, and so we went to chapel, and God was kind of a general idea more than a person or a relationship. And I wanted something to apply to my daily life, so I became a Buddhist. And I was a Buddhist. I studied transcendental meditation. I was doing some martial arts at the time, so that all fit, and there I was. And I felt this is something, a way I could live today. When I was at university, through Campus Crusade for Christ was really the first time I heard about a relationship with Jesus. And, of course, it changed my life. And one of the things that's been great about is it has allowed me all my big decisions to prayerfully hold them up. And I coined a term to myself that I called aggressive faith, that says I want to run as fast as I can, but I want to hold it loose enough to let God guide me. And so all my big decisions, who to marry, what job to take, when to move, all that stuff, for me, have fortunately in my life, I've been able to prayerfully hold those up and try to seek God's guidance over my wisdom. And I get it right sometimes. And other times I just, take off. But I've been married. I got married right out of college. My wife and I, we've been married 37 years this month. We have four kids. Two that are married with grandkids, one that's at university, and our oldest son was killed in a motorcycle accident about 6 years ago. And one of the things, just as a person, part of the reason for my focus now really working with ministries is something like that happens, at least in my life, and just helping other companies make more money, I just have no passion for that anymore. What got us through that was that we knew he knew Jesus, and that we do, and there's hope, and we need not grieve like the rest of the world does. So it was a real turning point for me. There's a whole lot of story there. But spiritually, after probably 25 years of being a Christian, that event unlocked, that brokenness in that event unlocked more spiritual openness for me than I'd had in all those years. I mean, because I guess as a fairly capable person, you run into some obstacle and I'm going to find a way around it. And you run into something like that and you can't find a way around it. You have to decide, is the God who is in charge of everything and allowed this to happen, am I still going to worship him? So it's a side note, but it's really helped me, brought me into the idea of really wanting to focus on ministries, on helping churches, those kind of things. Good morning. No worries. The way I got here with learning communities and with collaboration is I started actually in the military, and I was in the military for a number of years in the U.S. Then I got out into big corporate work, became a partner with a global firm called Ernst & Young. I head up part of their global strategy group in that. And in that group, they had just licensed a collaborative process where we would bring people together and... we would tell them that we could bring you together and you would do months of work in days. And it was just, it's a very way of working differently and moving around in groups. And there'd be this emergent idea. And it was just an amazing way of working. We built these big expensive centers. I saw that work. I felt called to it. I fell in love with it. I started running those centers for them. In 2001, I left, started my own company that I wanted to work with both kingdom and businesses and this kind of collaborative idea. And the kingdom part, I got introduced to a guy named Bob Buford, who ran an organization called Leadership Network. And I don't know if you've heard of them. They're in the U.S. Leadership Network had been doing big conferences, and they said, this was in probably 2001, they said, we need a new way of engaging with our constituents. And they had this kind of concept of learning communities that they said, let's bring churches together to meet over time to work on a topic. And they turned to me and they said, can you design a process for us of collaboration for those learning communities? So I designed all the work for Leadership Network, and that's what launched us on the learning communities. If you're familiar with 3DM, 3DM is a discipleship group here. They, just as a point, they worked with Leadership Network, and if you go to a 3DM session, they will talk about, they offer learning communities. It's very much the same stuff that Leadership Network taught them that I taught Leadership Network. So it's, you know, the techniques start to go out and get used. 3DM uses it. M4 would probably say they do a learning community, a style of training in the learning communities. We had one man here talked about using it in business. So there's it's a tool, and thus it can be applied a lot of different ways, okay? The term learning community, I think, really started back in the late 60s, maybe early 70s. And it was the idea of, at a university or somewhere, bringing people together that had a common area of study so that they could learn from one another. It was a little bit of peer-to-peer learning. So rather than everybody sitting like we are here with a lecturer in the front and you being students, you know, if it was that kind of setup, rather more the students would come together and work together to learn on this topic. And that's sort of the conceptual idea of a learning community. In the way it's kind of evolved now, so a place like LaBrie, that guy who was from there, you know, that is sort of the traditional learning community model. People that come together, they study together, they have an interest in something. The construct that is probably more prevalent now with 3DM, with me, with Leadership Network, with M4, is groups meeting together over time. And so I think there are three or four key elements of the learning community. First off, like I said, is you have groups that meet together over time at a set interval. All right? So most of them in church work seem to be meet every 6 months. The one example the man had in business is they met every week. So it really, the timing, it depends on what you're doing. What you want to be able to do, and I'll play with this a bunch, but you want to bring the people together, let them go do something, talk about what they did, what they worked and didn't work, talk about new things, go do it again. And so it gives you, so what happens is, if you set these up and you do this one, if you did this one this month, this is, let's just say, June, then you do one in December, let's make it every 6 months, and you do it, go again in June, these dates are set by the learning community. And so it's not a matter of, when you get done to this point, we will have a meeting. It's, we are having meetings wherever you are and how much you're getting done. Okay, so that's one of the first things. When you set times for a learning community, they should stay. You shouldn't go, we all thought we would have our first church planted by now so that we could talk about it, and none of us had planted our first church. Can we move this back another 3 months till we get it planted? That would not be the right way to think about it. The better way to think about it would be to get together and say, we all thought we could plant churches by now and we haven't. What's keeping us from doing it? So it gives you that kind of thinking on it. The other thing that makes a learning community, I think, valuable, it certainly can be done differently, but if it's multiple organizations, to me, one of the most important things is that it is teams, wait, my little teams here. It is teams coming together, not individuals. And the reason it's teams is because in a learning, the way I see a learning community, the way that I think, the reason you're here and you're thinking, oh, I've heard about a learning community, how can I use it? The thing that makes it different is there's real work happening. All right? For most of you, for example, at this conference, it's not real work. You're here as an individual, you're learning, you're thinking about it, you're in this conference, you have to go back to your organization and say, I just heard these great things. And you've got to carve out time from your busy schedule and try to convince other people that do what you learn. And you've got to get all that together. And then finally, if you're able to do all that, then you can begin to change and do something. Right? That's what happens when individuals come to a conference like this. But if you come as a team and you're able to get ideas and work on those ideas while you're together, the decision-making happens. And you can come out of here with a plan, and now you're going back to your organization, and you're beginning to start the plan. All right? So that's what makes these things really, really powerful. And so that means that, and this is all more my thinking than general, so there may be somebody else that says it different. But I believe then that in a learning community, that the old 80-20 rule, that if there's knowledge... You can't read that, I'll just put a big K. If there's knowledge that's presented, expertise that's being taught, that should only be 20%. 80% of the time is allowing these people to talk and make sure they understand that knowledge and say, what do they want to go do with it? So it's very dialogue-based. It's very interactive, and I'll talk about some of those things in a minute. But it's not a training. And the term, when I started looking at some of these, I worked with a pastor who had a group of international pastors that was meeting, and I was leading those, and they wanted to call them leadership communities because they said, we're not here to learn, we're here to lead. But the term that has mostly been used that people are familiar with is learning community. But it really isn't, in my mind, the way it's being used now, it really isn't, it isn't a teaching community. The other thing that happens then is you have that, and what should come out of this, out of each session, is a pretty good set of actions that group, that each of these teams is going to do. So that when you start the next learning community, what you begin with is that same set of actions, and you're able to ask everybody, let's share those. What did we do? What were we able to accomplish? And what didn't we do? And it holds you accountable. It also lets you realize, what if we're all having the same problem? You couldn't figure out how to do this thing. We did that the first day we got back. Well, if we say that, then you really want to come meet with me because I don't understand how, you know. And some things, one of the things that happens in any organization, but especially I think in the kingdom, is you as a leader or your ministry may have a real strength, gifting, or skill in doing something, and it's so natural to you, like most gifts are, you don't even realize it's anything special. So if I asked you to come tell me how you do evangelism, you know, you might say, well, we don't do anything special. We just do what everybody does. I couldn't teach on that, you know. But then we get in a discussion, and I say, well, you know, the problem we're having is We're in a big city, and we just don't know how to really reach people in the big city. And you go, well, we've been evangelizing big cities for years. Now we suddenly know, and we can talk to one another. And you would never say, I'm an expert at evangelism, but to me, you are, because you've been doing it. And so what happens in the dialogue is that ability to understand. To me, it's a really nice example of the body of Christ functioning, that all of us have different giftings and abilities and talents, and we can learn from one another and use from one another to make the whole healthier and better. Does it make sense? So if you're thinking that way, what you realize is when you design this time together, you have to give time for that discussion to let those things happen. The tendency is always to start, you know, that you finish this and you realize, I'll give some examples in a minute, but you realize we really don't know how to do discipleship. And so next time when we meet, we need to bring somebody in, some experts, to tell us about discipleship. And that's a great thing. But as soon as the experts come in, instead of giving them 20% of the time, you give them 50% of the time. And next thing you know, by the third one, you give them 75% of the time. And by the last time, you're having a conference like this. All the discussion has gone away. Okay, so you still want to bring that knowledge in, you can still do it. But the idea, these are working sessions. To that point, the expectations of the people who are coming, they need to come bringing their team, expecting to work. They don't come like the attitude you had coming here as a conference. You know, if you'd showed up here and we said, okay, I want each of you to start building out your action plans and what you're going to do, it'd be like, wait a minute. You know, I just came to learn. I'm just here to hear. And the expectations have to be right. The other thing on expectations, if you're thinking about doing a learning community, you want to think about what are the goals and objectives of the whole thing. And then within that, what are the goals for each one? So these should add up to this. But if you're thinking we are going to meet for 2 years, or the example again out of the business world, we're going to meet every week. The idea is in 6 weeks or 8 weeks, we are now all have a good enough understanding of what we're doing that we don't need to meet anymore. You would say here, if it's around, so probably an example would be good to kind of talk through this. I have the privilege of working in France with the CNEF, the National Council of French Evangelicals. They have brought together 9 denominations, and all 9 denominations are working together to increase church planting in France. The vision is, right now there's one evangelical church for probably every 30,000 people, and they want it to be one for 10,000. So that's the vision. And what these denominations realized is if they added up all the churches each denomination was planning on planting, it wasn't even close to being enough to change those numbers. So there was no way they could do it by themselves, so they decided they have to work together. So the learning community meets every 6 months. I actually head to Paris today, and then I'm working with these guys in the 5th meeting of them working together to kind of work on this. One of the that's kind of a construct, and so the other thing that happens is as a leader for this. One of the decisions you have to make. I do collaborative work, right? I facilitate these kinds of meetings. One of the decisions you need to make is you may just have one meeting. And it could be just like that. You could have 20% and then you talk about it and you plan things and everything's fine. And there is not a need to actually meet over time. So one of the first things you have to realize is, again, what is your goal? What are you trying to do? I believe the learning community, one of the reasons it works so well here in Europe is because so much is happening versus America, for example. Is so much is happening in Europe that is network-based. And it's just like the comment someone made that there are a number of churches and said you should be a learning community. There's a lot of that ability. And so the thinking of if we're a network or we're all a bunch of different pieces, wouldn't it be great to come together for a short amount of time, learn from another, go back and do what we're doing, come together? It's a nice construct to help that happen. And so I think it has a really good ability to do that. But you could say, we're just going to come together once, have a really good time of sharing, and we're done. So the first thing to think about is, what is the power of doing it over time? The other thing, and I'll talk about the French, I was going to do this later. You can tell if you have my outline, I'm probably all over the place, but hopefully I'll hit the most of the points. Yeah. Deciding what you want to work on. I'll tell you what, to stay a little bit on the outline, I'll come back to that. Let me, I talked about this being teams that work together over time doing work. That to me is a learning community. Teams meeting together over time, actually doing work. Okay? there is this idea of learning together and implementing separately, or learning together and working together. So for example, at Leadership Network, they have these different churches that when they did the European Learning Community, they had some of the largest churches in Europe. They would come together, and what would happen is they would learn from one another, and then they would all go implement whatever they learned completely separately. That's very different from coming together to go do something together. If you're an organization, if you are, so for example, I'm meeting in July with part of the Fresh Expressions movement in the Lutheran Church in Germany. They're an organization. They want to do more of this than this. They're looking at how can we work together as different churches within this expression to help one another to go do more. So the thinking on how we will work in these meetings is different to learn together, implement together versus learn together, implement separately. Does that make sense? And so you just need to know which one it is. The French example is a bit of both. Because all the denominations are learning from one another, but we are continually pushing them to actually work together. So now they're at a point where one denomination is actually sending their people for training to another denomination. I mean, some pretty big moves for how you would work together. Questions so far? I know this is a lot of. I'll bring it down here in a minute, but. Yes. So the question is, when you have the overall goal, how do you break that down? What they broke it down by are the topics they need to work on to reach that. It's not thinking. So part of a learning community that makes it special is the emergent things that happen in that. Okay? Here's what I mean. Let me, if I can find this real quick. Yeah, perfect. If you guys were in my talk the other day, you saw this already, so don't spoil it for. Let's see. There. So, how many of you have seen this logo? Yeah, they'd be happy with that. That's good. Everybody knows it. All right. How many of you see the arrow in the logo? Okay, some of you see it now because I asked you to look for it, all right? Right there. See it? All right, now two things happen. If you just found it, there's that sort of, aha, I just saw it. And secondly, now for the rest of your life, you will always see the arrow. You know, I can't undo it now that you've seen it.
We'll think of you always.
That's right, you think of me. That's right. He's that FedEx guy. That to me is an example of what's known as emergence. It's an idea that it's there, but you don't see it until you all of a sudden you discover this is, wait a minute, this is my problem. The power of learning communities when they're done right, I think, when they meet, is to me it's a really good learning community if you have that emergent kind of thing. If you show up and you just learn facts and you write them all down and you say, yep, this was good, and you go off, that's good. But if you start hearing these facts and I hear what you're doing and what you're doing and I go, whoa, wait a minute, I never thought I could do that. I never thought about doing it that way. That's an emergent thought, and that to me is what makes these really special. So here's an example of that. Again, back to the French. When they first met, this church planters, what do you think they said the three biggest barriers were to church planting? Time, money, and resources. Very inventive, you know, very money and resources. By the end of the first session, they said our biggest barriers are making disciples, understanding the culture, using different models for church planting, and training. Those were the problems. They were underneath the surface. But that working together, talking together, brought it up where everybody realized, you know, what we're talking about here is making disciples, Not about resources. We'd have resources if we made disciples. The problem is disciple making is not having, is not looking at the resource level. If we could make better disciples, we'd have thus more resources. And suddenly all the groups kind of went, you're right, that's the issue. How can we work on discipleship? Thinking of, this is something I actually added into the outline, and just to make sure, because I've been so focused on the outline so far, this is something new. This is kind of parts, components of a learning community. I think the first one is there are three parts. And they are the community, the content, and the process. So, the community is who comes together for this learning community. The example that they're typically all people that are focused on the same kind of idea or doing the same work or in the same organization, but there's something that brings them together. Okay, again, comparing it to this conference. This conference is by even though it's by invitation, it's for those who believe in the Word of God and are working to spread that in His kingdom throughout Europe. It's a pretty broad category. So I could be a theologian studying in seminary at Oxford, or I could be a church planter in Lithuania, and we both get to come. We really don't have a whole lot together other than the Spirit of God working our lives to do what He's calling us to do. A learning community is usually more about we are all working together to, we're a number of churches in one city that want to reach our city. We're a number of churches that all do coffee house ministries. And we want to learn from one another on how to best do coffee house ministries. There's something that brings us together, okay? So there's that community. Who is it you're trying to gather? And bring it together. The second is that you're going to put into these meetings is some level of content. So we all know what we know, and we don't know what we don't know. That's why I get paid the big bucks. Things like that come out of my mouth. So if I put all of us together, we all have our own experiences of, let's say, church planting. And there's going to be a lot of value in understanding what each one of us do. But then you have somebody from Asia come and say, let me tell you about the cell church in Asia and how the cell church is exploding. And suddenly it's a new perspective, a new piece of knowledge that doesn't say we need to all go do cell church. That's the American problem. You know, for years it'd be everybody, but we've mastered that problem. If you think about Saddleback and the Saddleback Way, or Willow Creek and the Willow Creek Way. That's the way they do church. If we just do the church the way they do church, we'll have a big church like they do. It's form, and it's the way of doing it. It's not the DNA. It's not the essence of doing it. Okay? So if somebody came over here from Asia, and I've had the privilege of working with churches that are just growing by thousands and thousands, And we said, tell me how you do it. And they say, well, we do cell church. Ooh, tell me how you do cell church. That's what we'll do. That's not the answer. The answer is you have this thing called cell church that works because you have tight communities that live together all over Asia, and it fits in the construct of those communities. I live in this part of the this country, and my construct, the context is very different. But what can I learn from what you're doing that I can apply to where I am? So the content idea is what's in the people's heads, the community that comes together, the experiences they have, and then there may be outside content as well. And part of forming one of these is for you to decide what that balance is. And again, I think the 80-20 rule or the 20-80 rule comes into effect, but there is a need for both. When the French came up with those four things, then the next meeting we focused on discipleship, then we focused on culture. So for discipleship, they brought in Dietrich Schindler, who was here. For culture, they brought in Martin Robinson. So it was like, let's get an expert to come in and give us some perspective on discipleship so that we can begin to think, how might we use this in our own? So the balance of the time is, what did we do since last time? Where are we now? Here's new knowledge on discipleship. What does it mean to us? What are we going to go do about it? So that's kind of how that plays out on content. If you look at M4 and the way M4 now does training in the learning community model, they have done something that Oyvind and others call, they flip the classroom, which says all of the content you need to watch online before you come. And when you come, all of our time is going to be discussing it. So really the 80-20 in the meeting has probably gone to like 10%. Because they expect you to have seen all the content before you come, and the meeting is all about working it together. So there are a lot of ways to do that, you know. But the idea is you have a group, you have some content about how to do something, and then you have the process that you're going to use in these meetings. And, I mean, that's where I make my living, is designing that process of interaction. And I certainly can't train you or take you through all those things now of how to do it. I will tell you that most of it, just as a simple idea of how to do it, is typically there's some set of knowledge that's presented. This is either from an outside expert or it could be from the group itself. So knowledge could be, it's been 6 months since we met last time. Tell us what you've done in your church. Tell us what you've done in your church. I'm working with a group of churches in Norway, some of the fastest growing churches in Norway, and they are all coming together to help one another grow right. I was really glad. The first question they asked is, well, we all need to decide, what does it mean to grow? Does it just mean more people? Does it mean more mature believers? What does it mean? I knew it was going to be a good learning community because that was where they started. That's a great question. You know, rather than just saying, how do we get more people in the church? You know, so there's knowledge there of, well, what do you do in your church today? What do you do in, you know, how do you do youth? How do you do, are you in house church? Or are you in big church? You know, what, and learn from those things. That's all knowledge. What happens after you have some amount of knowledge, though, and is typically I put people into tables, and if there are with mixed groups. So let's say we had three churches that were here. Church, let's call them A, B, and C. The way you do it is you'd have somebody from A, somebody from B, somebody from C. A, B, C, A, B, C, and all the way around. And that you'd mix them up. They all get the same knowledge. You get to talk about it as a mixed group. And then eventually, one way or another, the next thing, you talk about it as a mixed group. You share what your thoughts were. So it's together, it's apart, it's together again. So, and this is really important. The way you share is this group has to answer the questions you've given them or whatever you've asked them to do. They have to write it down on a flip chart. If you don't, or a piece of paper, if you don't write it down, what happens is the first group says, well, we think there are three things to do. Boom, boom, boom. And then you go to the second group, what do you think? And they go, well, yeah, ours is pretty much the same. What's not? It's going to be a little different. But that little thing, kind of like the arrow, that may be that's the spark. But it gets lost because, you know, or this group has a very senior and respected pastor in it. And he says, I believe there's, you know, just two ways to do this. What does the second group say? Oh, we're with you. There could be no more than two ways. You've got it. If they all write it down, though, what happens is, let's say we've said, list four problems that you think this group is facing. Let's say it's, again, church planting, that we're facing in church planting. And so each group writes down four problems. Now, this first group has a very senior person in it. And they say, I think the most important problem is this one. And because he's a senior person, everybody kind of agrees with it, and they list some other things. Hey, yours. The second group, they're really talking through it, and they say this is the most important problem, and they come up with it. The third group, well, you know, they're thinking about it, this and that. Finally, somebody at the end says, yeah, I think that's the problem, and puts it there. Now when all three of them share, what happens? This problem is seen in all three groups. It's emerged as actually a problem we're all dealing with. And because it came up honestly, now we can begin to say maybe we should do something with that. That all happens because you have the group write it down. Does that make sense? Because that's so easy to miss that says we'll just have a talk about it. Imagine a lecturer like this. It's just like we're doing. If I do Q&A, okay, that's all the knowledge I have. Are there any questions? We're going to take 30 minutes and do Q&A. What questions do you have? It's a very linear conversation. You know, if there are 20 of us in the room, I count like a Baptist, there are probably only 10 here, but it's 20 in the room. You know, you ask a question, I'm answering you. There are 19 other people sitting there waiting for their turn. And maybe they have an interest in that question, maybe they don't. But it's not a dialogue. If I put you around tables and I say, here's learning communities, this is what it like, go talk about what you think is good and bad, you're going to process it completely differently. The key in thinking about this kind of work is the learning doesn't happen here, the learning happens here. So again, if it's 20-80, this is where it really, because it's learning, you're going to apply. You know, that guy was a great speaker, and he said five really good things, and I'm taking this one away from me. I don't think the other four apply. That's learning where you're going to go do something with it. Instead of going back and saying, let me tell you what I learned, there are these five things that people should do sometime. You know, so the process in a session does something to me like knowledge together, work on it separately, share it with the group, and then you could go to groups that are all A, all B, and all C, and say, what are we now as a group going to do about this? So you have this mixed processing where I'm learning. You're from a house church. I'm from a large church. You're from a discipleship ministry. This is from an evangelistic group, and we're all working in the city. So when we talk around this table, I get the viewpoint of house church, big church, evangelism, and discipleship. And we have a big discussion. When we get down here, and I've had one of my guys in this team, one in this team, one in this team. Now we get together and we go, what did you learn from everybody in the room? And what do you think it means to us as a big church or us as a house church? You understand how that builds the discussion. It really, this ability to do that is why people will go to some kind of learning community with 3DM or M3 or one of mine or something and go, it was such a different experience. Okay, the process allows that. Now, you know, I've done this for probably 15 years and I just gave it all away right here. No, but it's basically this kind of thinking. The question is, how do you deal with that question? What did you hear? What does it mean? You don't ask, what did you hear, what does it mean, and what are we going to do about it? I don't know what to do about it yet. I'm still trying to figure out what it means. So I usually allow that kind of processing. That kind of processing before you can make decisions. The question you ask down here is, okay, now that you know what it means, what are you going to go do about it? You know, if you don't walk out of here with a plan that says I'm going to go do something, then again, we're back to a nice academic kind of discussion. The other thing is, if you look at something like this, and typically in a learning community day, you're doing this different times, around different topics, around different things throughout the day. You can't do this kind of thing in 2 hours, right? You can't have a guy come in and talk for 45 minutes, say we're going to talk around the table for 15, and let's go decide what to do. There's not enough time to process really what it means. A learning community typically runs anywhere from a day and a half to 3 days, depending on the group and the size and everything. In France, we start at noon on one day. We do another full day. We end at noon on the next day. M4 training, I think, is all 2 days long. 3 DM is, I think, 2 days, something like that. But you have to have enough time to really work through this. And I know time is valuable, and nobody has enough. The other, but if you don't have enough time to work with the ideas, you come up with a list of action that you don't really believe in. You know, you jumped to the answer, and as soon as you start working, you go, wait a minute, this isn't going to work, because, and the whole thing stops. You want to have all that kind of thinking thought out here, so when you go to work, you're working on your plan. Everybody today multitasks. Half of you that are on devices now are probably taking notes, and the other half are checking Facebook or emails or something like that. I mean, it's what we do, okay? Not you, Yerzy. I didn't mean other people. That's right. You've heard it all before anyway. That's right. Yeah, we've had the privilege of working together a long time. So, but that's the way we work. We multi-process everything. Psychologists, doctors, people that think about if you are doing something that's really new or something that's complex or something that's really important, multitasking is the worst way to go about it. You need to put those things aside and focus to listen. Learning communities are about allowing you to focus. All right? That very often, you know, we'll say no cell phones, no computers. You know, we want you in the conversation while you're working. And so the idea of being in the conversation, the idea of taking a day to do something like this, it more and more in our society, people don't understand. Can't we just Skype? You know, can't we do a call? Well, you can, but I mean, it's not going to give you the emergence. You're not going to see the arrow, you know, and you're not going to do those things because that happens when you're around the table talking together. So that's all I'm going to say about process, but that's the three components that I talked about, or the three parts: community, content, and process. You have the right people that are coming together. One of the things Leadership Network learned in the U.S. is if they're bringing churches together, because they would do a topic, like in the U.S., multi-site got to be a really big topic, you know, where there was a big church and they were doing other locations with videos from the big church. So it was a satellite kind of movement. I don't know if much of that's here, but in the U.S., it became a big way to do things. They would bring together churches that are all doing multi-site, okay? One of the things they found out is they would only let you join if, in fact, you were already doing it. Because it's very different to have somebody who's already doing it and somebody who's thinking about doing it. The discussions are different. If we're both already doing it, now we can talk about, this is working for me, it's not working for you. If you got somebody who's just thinking about it, the level of to talk is different. So the community needs to be the same. They all needed to be doing it. They also realized in some settings, some groups would bring their senior pastor, some groups wouldn't. And senior pastors want to be with other senior pastors most of the time. And so if you decide the level of people that are coming, you have, you know, two senior pastors show up and everybody else are very junior people, sometimes the discussion doesn't go as good as it should, you know. But you get a group of all senior pastors together, they're going to have a pretty robust conversation. So those kind of things are what you think about when you put the community together. The content is what's relevant to the discussion. So, for example, when Leadership Network started around multi-site, that was the first learning community that I designed and delivered for them back in 2001, maybe. There wasn't a lot of content on multi-site. There were probably 10 churches around the U.S. doing it, all of them doing it by themselves. Nobody had written books on it. Nobody had written papers on it. There wasn't anywhere to go to find out. The knowledge around multi-site was actually emerging from that first learning community. And it brings up a point that says, I told Leadership Network when they did that, I said, you know, you guys, in about a year and a half, you're going to be the national experts on multi-site. And they said, oh, no, we're not experts. We don't do that. We just help. And I go, no, you don't understand. You're going to have seen 10 or 20 churches all doing multi-site. You will have more of a perspective of how that's done than any one of these churches can by themselves. If you're doing a learning community, if you're bringing together a group of church planters in your city, by about the third or fourth meeting, that group and you will have more of a perspective of what's going on in your city than any one of those could by themselves. And so there's a knowledge that comes up. And you might want to think, is there something we should even be creating about that? Or is there something we should be communicating about that? Because that's the understanding of why things has happened is as important as how things happen. And all that comes out in the learning community. And then we talked about process. The other three things that kind of go along with this in the learning community are three roles. I'll start on a new sheet. Keep it up high. There are three parts. There are three roles. There's the leader. The participants. And the facilitator. So the leader does a couple. The participants I just talked about. They all have the same kind of purpose. They've all come together. I've talked about that a fair amount on who comes in. The leader is the person that's driving a lot of this. And he or she has a couple of responsibilities. The main responsibility of the leader is to look at the whole. What are we here to do? What are we trying to accomplish? Why are we here? And what is happening between the sessions? So again, in France, each of the denominations have designated a strategist. And the strategist meets with one of the Kenef leadership 3 months after we meet. We meet every 6 months. 3 months in, they meet and talk about what are we doing. You know, there's a shepherding, there's a coaching, there's something going on between this to make sure things go on right. That's the role of the leader. The leader, if you notice, operates more out here and what happens in the middle, not as much in the session. In the session, the person that moves things along is a facilitator. And if the leader and the facilitator is the same person, it's okay, but it's not great. Now, and it depends. You take something like M4, where they have a program they're teaching in the learning community format. I can be the teacher and the facilitator, because it's different than I'm not as a teacher trying to make decisions. Typically, the leader is one of these groups that's in here. So I'm trying to learn from my group. I want to work with my group too. And while I'm doing that, the other groups are working. Well, if I want to work in my group, then it's hard for me to lead this overall. Or if, like we talked a little bit in Romania, Czech Republic, where are you?
Republic.
Czech Republic. You've got one organization. So if the leaders from that organization were coming together and you're the head of that organization, you're acting as the leader. You're making decisions. You're wanting to work on the work. If you're having to facilitate the process too, it can become confusing, right? Because let's say I'm both the boss and the facilitator. And I say, what are some ideas for what we should do? And three or four ideas come out. And I go, those are good ideas. Is there another one? What's like, are you being the facilitator wanting us to do more? Or are you being the boss telling us our answers weren't good enough? You know, you don't know. All right. And it gets confusing. So if there's a facilitator, they're focused on whatever agenda and moving things along, and that lets you participate in the meeting. So that's kind of the three parts and the three roles of a learning community. Any questions so far? So if you're a leader, if you have to be both the leader and the facilitator, how can you make that work well? In something like M4, because it's the same content you're delivering every time, if you go do this in Spain, when you do it in Portugal, it's going to be the same. So as a leader, you're not trying to change all this. You're able to, you know what you're leading as a group, and you have time then to focus on the interaction, so it works. If you're 3DM, and the way they do things, it's the same thing. It's the same content over time, and the leader facilitator can do both. If it's a learning community where you are, let's say you're going to do this in your church, you want to kind of use this construct to bring people, you're a house church group, and you meet in four or five locations, and you decide we want to come together every 3 months and do this. And you're the head of that, and you're going to facilitate that. What the best thing you can do is make sure you are clear when you're facilitating and when you're leading. So you stand up and say, hey, this is Tom as the facilitator. I'm thinking we need to work this idea some more. or you're saying, this is Tom as the head pastor. I think we've reached a decision and we need to do this. What do you think? Now you can answer either one, but you need to be clear about that so we know what we're doing. The other thing that's really hard is if you're the leader and you have ideas, it's very easy for you to say, and you're the facilitator, let's say you think there are two ways to move forward. It's sometimes hard to hold yourself back and say, so what do you think are some ways we could move forward? Versus saying, you know, it sounds like there are two ways to move forward. Right? And so now I've directed you that there are two ways versus maybe there really are three and I just hadn't thought of the third one. So you can do it, but as the leader and the facilitator, you've just got to be conscious of those things. Does that make sense? This is a really good point. It's about decision making. The question is, as a leader and facilitator, it's about decision making. So you do this exercise, and you really thought as a leader that the most important thing were these three. And that's what you thought. That's what you think this group needs to focus on. And you do the exercise, and it comes up to be these three. It's now very hard for you as a leader to work through that and lead the group at the same time. You know, you're trying to, so it's a great point. And it depends on how big the group is. I mean, if you had a smaller team that's working that way, you can probably do it. If you had four churches each with five people, you got 20 people in the room, and you're trying to decide, what do I do with this? It is difficult to both lead the process and make decisions. Yeah, so the question is a little bit about the role of the facilitator. I think the facilitator has a couple of main roles. The first one is he or she keeps things on track. And when you're facilitating, you want to think, what were the goals we set for the end of the day? Not it's 12:30, we said we'd be done by 12:20. And you have to be conscious of that. But the trick is, and this is the other thing that's good with a facilitator. Why can I facilitate in Europe? All right, as an American, I don't know that much about culture in Europe, and especially in the multiple countries I'm working with. You know, everything's a little different, and what does it mean? And often I'm speaking through a translator. So how can I facilitate? I can facilitate because, one, I'm listening to what is going on in the room through the translator, listening to what the leader tells me, and two, I'm just focused on moving along the process. So we've been having a conversation for 45 minutes, and we were only supposed to have it for 30, and I don't know if this is really an important conversation that needs to go for an hour, or if we've run off on some rabbit trail, and we're talking about something that's taken us way off the topic. Because I may not know that, especially if it's in, say, French or Czech or something. So what I've got to do is I've got to then look at the leader and say, is this a conversation? We're kind of behind time. Is this a conversation we need to continue? And the leader will tell me, yes, this is really important. We need 15 more minutes. And then we let it go. Or he'll go, no, I think we're ready to move on. And then I'll go, great, let's take us to the next exercise. So as a facilitator, my role is to keep things moving. And to think about the process. I mean, if you go, when you move to your breakout around flip charts, my job is to go take off the old flip charts, put the new ones on. If there are questions, I put the questions out. If we eat lunch and we're working, I help clear the table so you can keep working. My job is to serve you so you can have the best conversation you can. And it's hard to think about doing all those things if you're trying to think about leading the meeting and what's going on in the meeting as well. So, okay. Any other questions? The question is, how do you best form mixed groups? And so if you have tables and you've got the groups around it, there are two pieces to it. There's the who do you put in each group? All right, so you've got these three churches again, let's just say, A, B, C. And let's say we want to mix them. I want to think about a couple of things. I want to think about where they're from. What their personality is like, and what their role is. So let's say I have the senior pastor from each one of these, I have the worship leader, and I have the evangelist director. Do I want to put all the senior pastors so they're A, B, and C, but they're all senior pastors? Or do I want to put a senior pastor from A, a senior pastor from B, and a senior pastor from C? Do I want to mix them as they're all worship leaders, senior pastors, worship leaders, evangelists, or do I want to mix them across? And finally, is this one a really loud and big person like me that's probably going to dominate the conversation, and I need to have someone like Yerzy next to me to go, hey, Tom, be down a little bit. We got it. You know, those kinds of things. So as a facilitator, you really want to think through that. And there's no right or wrong, but at least you know why you're doing what you're doing. It's not, and sometimes I've certainly done groups where, you know, we say, mix yourself up into four or five teams. And it doesn't really matter. You mix them up and they just, you know, so it's up to you how specific you need to be. But those are things you want to think about. Where they come from, what their personality is, what their role is. And it helps put that together. Yes, sir. The question is, what is a way to make sure that the activity is common enough to all but still drives you in the direction you want? Yeah. Two parts to that. The way I facilitate, the way this happens is the facilitation is done by two things. One, putting the right people in the groups. And then the second thing is giving them the right assignment. So whether it's written or verbal, here's what you're going to work on. That's what you're talking about. That is different than me standing up as a traditional facilitator and saying, I hear you say this, I hear you say that, is this what we mean? So you're right, it's about forming the questions and how do you do the questions. Any questions I present have been developed ahead of time with the leadership team of this group. So let's say you were again, these five churches in a city. You have maybe at least three of them that are on your design team. You've met with them ahead of time and said, when we begin to talk about this topic, what do you think the questions are we need to ask? And the four of you have come up with those questions. And because one was from a house church and one was from an evangelical society and one was from a big church, if the four of us all agree on those questions, they're probably going to be the right questions. So that's the way it comes up. It's thought about here before. It's not me and my expertise trying to say this is what you need to talk about. Because I say, so we need to talk about where we're going to do this, right? That's what we want to ask them. We want to ask them, you know, where and when are you going to do this? One of those other people may say, we can't ask them where. We don't even know why. And if we don't know the why, then we can't say where we're going to do it. Well, everybody on that little team decides, you're right, we got to do the why first. Then you're right, the question fits where the context is. If I don't know that, or I say, listen, we need to spend some time thinking about why we're doing this. And the senior pastor says, no, we don't. You know, we've been praying about this and working for this for a year. We don't need to talk about why anymore. We know what we need to do. This is about how we're going to go do it. So again, that's decided ahead of time so that then when you write the questions, they probably fit. And so that's probably the best way to move those things along. Make sense? Yes, sir. Great question. So the question is like when you talk about knowledge and then understanding and decision making, where are you? Do you begin with the knowledge? What if you don't know what the knowledge is? How do you start? Where do you start on putting one of these things together? You start by saying, if I can find my sheet, you start by saying, what is the overall goal of this whole community and what is the goal we're trying to achieve today? So if the goal today is we want to define what the problem is, all right, the churches in Norway that I worked with, when they first came together, the question is, what is it you want to talk? I actually had a meeting with the senior leaders from the seven of those churches before we started the learning community. And we said as those seven leaders, if you were to come together every 6 months and work on this idea of growth, what would you want to get out of it? And we had that discussion. They decided, yes, it would be good to get together if we could talk about these kinds of things. And yes, it would be good. So then, okay, so we want to talk about those kind of things. Which one do we want to talk about first? Are you ready to talk specifically, or do the groups you're bringing together need to think about all of it? Well, they need to think about all of it. Well, then, okay, so the first session is going to be about understanding, wow, I didn't even know there were six other churches in Norway growing as fast as I am. All right, so versus we all know each other, we all know it's growing. What we need to talk about is we're all having problem fundraising. Okay, so do you know how to do fundraising? Well, we all do it a little bit, but not great. So do we need to bring in a fundraising expert? That would be terrific. We'd love to have one of those. So you can have all those decisions based on the goals you want to achieve. You know, and that's part of the planning. And again, when you hear this, you can think as a leader, that's really the leader's job as much. I mean, the facilitator is going to make it work. But the leader is the one who also has all these relationships and is putting things together. So you can see there's time happening, there's effort happening before you come together as a group, and that's the way. That's what makes it. That's what makes it flow, makes it go well. Now, as you said, you were asked to do one. Not sure how well it did. These kind of things, working around tables, sharing things. Even if you don't do it well, you will probably have a better discussion than you ever would have had you just sat everybody down around a big table and said, so what do we want to talk about? You know, so hopefully they can help. The other thing that I have learned over the last few years, and I don't know, I don't have it as a role in here, but this is something I've learned, and this is something that's really been reinforced by Øyvind as much as anything else that's influenced me. Is I believe there needs to be a spiritual rhythm through this and through the day itself. That if you were to work on this, perhaps after everybody shares this, before you go decide what to do, you say, let's take 15 minutes of silent prayer and meditation. God has now shown us a lot of possibilities. We need to step back from our own working and say, Lord, which one of these possibilities do you want us to go after? And even now as I start talking, you know, I forgot about it till now. There's a tendency to get working and forget about these things. And that is so important. And this is a little off topic. I spoke about this last time, but let me tell you why I think that's important. This is a little extra. I believe that in any organization, there are three elements. The first one is relational. This is the way people get along, what they do. In any other organization on the planet, there is an operational one. So if I'm a small business and I'm the president and my wife keeps the books and my son does the sales, we operate all in the relational space. We get to be a bigger business. We have to start to add policies and procedures and processes, and we become operational, how we do things. Every organization on the planet has those two. Only the body of Christ has a third one, which is a spiritual. Thus, the discussions we have when we come together are influenced by all three of these things. If you're running a church, you certainly have the relational piece, who's doing what, but you have the operational piece. You have a way you do things. Somebody's got to turn on the lights. Somebody's got to set up the stuff. Somebody's going to, you know, there's an operational component to it, but nobody is coming together or wanting to have these things if it's not serving what God wants us to do. Just one other thing on this model, and by the way, my website, wildworksgroup.com, I've got this, and I've got some other models on that if you want to take a look at it. It's just something to think about. Again, that's off topic a bit. But the space between relational and spiritual is prayer. That's how they interact. The space between spiritual and operational is discernment. We could do a lot of things. Are they the right things God wants us to do? The relationship between relational and operational is gifting. Do I have the right people doing the right things that play to their gifts and maximize them? I say that on the side because the question was really about discerning all these things we could do. There are a lot of you're making decisions in the session. And before, I used to say, you know, I could facilitate right past the Holy Spirit. You know, I know how to get a group thinking. I know how to get work happening. We'll go make decisions before, you know, we're all doing what's right in our own mind. And so there's time that you step back to allow the Spirit to work to say, is this doing what we're doing? Questions? I kind of went over that quickly. Discernment. So the question is, think about bringing leaders together for learning community, and you want them to all be better and help one another, but you also want to grow the vision, and that they want to think about even more than just themselves. So, again, back to the participants, you would talk to each of those participants and make sure that they agree to both of those things. They have a vision for both of those things. And if they do, then you have the right people. If somebody says, you know, I really understand this growing the thing for our city, but I'm focused on what I'm doing right now, they're probably not a good candidate for that learning community. One of the questions, how do you capture all this work? If you had four or five tables and everybody's doing flip charts, you end up with a lot of stuff. The beauty of a flip chart is once you write it down, it doesn't go away. If you write it on a whiteboard and you have to erase it each time, there's a real pressure to capture things. I have somebody that typically takes all of these things, takes digital pictures of them, cleans them up a little bit, and drops them into a PowerPoint. So you have a full-time record of everything that happened. So you could ask somebody to do that for you. Everybody has smartphones. It's pretty, you know, you can always take your own pictures. But it's really pretty easy to just take, say, a PowerPoint, take a picture of this, maybe clean it up a little bit in iPhoto or something, and then just drop it right into PowerPoint. And then you've got the record. The other thing is, you've got the record of the work, not somebody's interpretation of the record. It's not cleaned up. Here are the outcomes of the meeting. You're like, was that the meeting I was in? That looked very different than what I was doing. You know, but it's just the capture of the work. So that's digital capture like that, to me, is probably the best way to do it. Let me move on a few more things, because I'm conscious of the time, because I unfortunately have to get the 10:45 bus. Some things here in the part two of this, I've said it's about teams, not individuals. It's about doing work, not just learning. We've talked about a lot of that. In the learning community approach, different results require a different way of working. I just met last night with Greg and the leadership team of the ELF, and they're talking about doing a learning community for the leaders of ELF, the national leaders, and the network leaders, to say how can all three of those and how can those together be the best it can be to serve Europe. Great, be honored if we go do that. One of the things Greg said is, you know, we've never met like that before and really worked that way before. This is going to be different for us. You know, we've had a few meetings and we've done them, but really putting it all on the table and asking everybody what to do, that's different for us. And if you want different results, you've got to work differently. A learning community may be very different than the way you've worked before. You've had management meetings, you bring the leaders together, they decide what to do, they go back and tell their people. Now suddenly you're bringing all the, you know, several people together. And you don't have that, you know, people will say, I want that agenda, you know, the specific agenda. And I've got to, are we still, you know, I want to do this, and it's just different. And they have to understand that to come together. And hopefully the reason it's different, you're going to get different results from it. You're going to get more relationship. You're going to get more ideas that emerge. You're going to get more unity, those kind of things. Bounded sets and centered sets is something that, to me, is really about collaboration, but just it's a concept I talked about. A bounded set is a church or an organization that says, this is what we believe and this is how we do it, and we're going to stay doing it this way, and we're really not going to work with you unless you believe and do things just like we do. All right, it is the mega church in the U.S. We can provide everything for everybody. We all do it our way, and frankly, we're not going to work with somebody else who doesn't do it just like this. And there can be very good reasons for that. I mean, like I said, there's scale, there's efficiency. I mean, a mega church in the U.S. can do all these things. They're really good at doing it. You have another way of doing things. I know how to do this. I'm going to do it this way. Okay, that's a bounded set thinking. And like I said, it works. There are reasons for that. The other kind of thing is what's called a centered set. And a centered set says, these are our core beliefs, calling, and probably values. And no matter what we do, we will not violate those. We believe that it's, it's the inerrant word of God, and it's all about Jesus Christ and who he is. And we believe that house church is the best way to manifest that. That may be that's group thinking. Okay. Within that, then, though, they go, well, house church is the best way we believe to gather. However, how we evangelize, how we work in the community, what we do to serve others, we're open to do it any way you want. We'll work with a soup kitchen with the Anglicans, or we'll work with the Catholics, or we're going to work with some community group because we're in here serving and we're reaching people. But when it comes to worship, we want to bring them into a house church. So what happens in a centered set is because I know what I believe and I'm going to hang on to that, how I manifest it, how this part especially can be done many different ways, I'm very open to that. So I say that because in a learning community, if you get a bunch of people like this together, it's not going to have as much impact as if you get people like that together. Because at best, they're going to say, if you'll come help me, we'll do it this way. It's competitive. This is a great idea, but I've just got so much going on here. I'm not sure I could do that. Not a lot comes from it. So the mindset, I think, is important. You can think about that if you're one organization. If these are people that all work together, do you guys think this way about the whole organization all the time, or does everybody just do their job and that's all they do? If everybody just does their job and you put them into this learning community and say, let's all think about the big thing, you've never asked me to do that before. I'm not sure what I can say. I don't know how I can do. So there's a mindset that helps these things work. Peter Drucker was kind of the father of management. He used to say, everybody needs a place to think their confusion out loud. And this is what a learning community can be. It's the best ability to go, I think I'm doing the best I can, but I'm not really sure that it is. Or I got this success, but I don't know if that's what God's calling me to do. Or I'm trying to choose between I've got three great opportunities here. I'm not sure which one to do. That kind of transparency, that ability to think that out and have others go, I was right where you were 3 years ago. This is what we did. Well, I don't know about you, but I heard there was a church in, the Ukraine that did it like this. Things suddenly you're able to think through that confusion out loud. And that's, again, part of the beauty of a learning community. I talked about having a process for what drives it. It's just like it's not just getting together in a room and going, so what do you guys think? You've thought through the agenda. You've thought through ahead of time of why you're there, those kind of things. Relationship is so important. That's something else I've learned. I've certainly learned a lot of places, but I've certainly learned a lot from M4 and from you guys. The not just the relationship, like, yeah, everybody knows you need to have a relationship to work together, but really there is a heart understanding of one another so that you can help them do what God's calling them to do, not intellectually just thinking, how can I give them knowledge or whatever. So is there time for relationship when you do this? Americans are really big at filling the agenda all day long. We start at 8 in the morning, you're going to get 15 minutes for coffee, and then you're going to get 30 minutes for lunch. And by the way, this doesn't work real well in France or Spain, I tell you that much. It's like, no, 2 hours, that's what we'll take. It's like, okay, but Americans will fill this time of work, or we'll show up, and we don't want to even spend much time praying together or asking you how it's going. Like, enough of that stuff, let's get to work. Well, that stuff may be what's keeping you from doing the work. That stuff may be what you need to build upon to, in fact, do the work better. And if we don't know one another relationally, then it just becomes this mechanical thing we do. So even in these learning community times, there is time of relationship. And it doesn't mean, by the way, that you have to go offsite and do some team building exercise that's out of context from what this is. What it means is, in the work, do you have the ability to say, hang on a minute, I understand that this is what you do in your church, How did you feel led to do that? What does your family think about that? Has that ever, have you, is you as an individual, were you gifted that way? Or do you, I don't understand. That's, to me, a relationship that develops around what God's calling you to do, and that is very powerful. It's not like pretending, you know, let's all go off and, decide, all right, if we were all dogs, what kind of dog would you be? Oh, good, now we know about each other. Let's talk about, you know, it's silly. You know, it's really about, wait a minute. Tell me, you know, you were having such an impact on this part of the community. How did God get a hold of your heart for that? You know, I mean, it's like you asked me, why do you do this with churches? I have to tell you about my son being killed. I have to tell you about how God took me over time from doing work to doing corporations to running my own business to doing business in kingdom to now all I want to do is the kingdom. You know that about me. That's part of my story for why I'm doing this. And it's just a little piece, but that relational thing is so important, and you want to weave that throughout as you go. Lastly, I've got to close on a couple of things here. Learning communities to me are about change. If you want to come to this and you're going to bring people together every so often over a long period of time, and they're going to bring a team together, and they're going to spend a whole couple of days or day together, and they're going to go off and do just what they've been doing, then you're really wasting your time. I mean, there's really no need to do that. You could send some emails around and say, this is what we're doing, what are you doing? And be much more efficient about it. So inerrant in what's inside a learning community is there is both the need and the desire for change. The reason you're putting this much effort into something new and bringing people together is that there's some greater result you want to have that you're not getting, or some problem you've got to come over that you can't do on your own. So for example, back to the French example, every one of those denominations is planting churches. They are doing that. They are doing it, some better than others, but they're all planting churches. They're all moving along. What they realize is if they all keep doing just what they're doing, it'll never have the impact they need to have in France. So there's something bigger, and we realize then if we, you know, you get the results, your organization is perfectly designed to achieve the results it's currently getting. Right? I mean, everything's set to do that. If you're going to get different results, you've got to do something different in the organization. Learning communities is about allowing you to explore what that different might be and allow you to kind of do in that. So if back to the people who come, if the people who come are not willing to change, they don't think they need to change, they don't think this is important enough, then they probably shouldn't be in the meeting. I've offered up learning communities where we brought together six or eight churches and we've said, this is what we're thinking, and here's what we want to do. And I've had three of the churches go, that sounds like a great idea, but that's not me. I don't feel called there. We got too much going on. I don't think, and that's fine. The five who are coming are the ones that then are the right ones to come for that. And it's about really being upfront with that. Because the change is important. The other thing that happens on this, just one kind of the last comment around learning communities is by definition, kind of in this, although I've represented these as three different things, and that sometimes can help you think both in collaboration and as you run something, where's the issue or what do we do? I can partner with somebody to run a soup kitchen that we are theologically different. You know, I can pray with somebody who runs a house church, even though I run a big one, but we can pray to it. So it helps you kind of divide things up to think about it. It all doesn't have to be the same. However, they all bleed into one another. You know, they all, and so if you're beginning to think about change in a learning community, and you're here to say, we're just talking about how we can be more effective in, you know, doing our city outreach campaign we all do together every year. Very operational thing. You can't have that conversation without somebody saying, you know, the problem in the operation, the problem is we don't have the heart for the right people in the city. You know, I just met somebody in the Muslim community and we don't even engage them. We need to build relationships there so we can bring them in. And you can't have a discussion about one without the other. And so you realize that as a leader, if you're entering into a learning community, these other things are going to come up. And you really, again, back to relationship and all that, the power of this construct is you ought to have time to talk about that and not say things like, you know, that's a great idea about building relationships, you know, in that part of the community, but that's not why we're here today. We're here to talk about this. Well, I can't talk about that until we talk about this. And so you want to give it time for those kind of things to happen as you go. Final comment, just so you know, if you hear this term, I have began to talk about something called wave change. And wave change is my way of using learning communities to transform organizations. And I'm hopefully going to, over the next few years here in Europe, create wave change engagements with some large players that will allow both doing the learning community and attached to the learning community is training of facilitators so they can go through their own communities. So for example, if I worked with Fresh Expressions in Germany, the learning communities we will do, when they're done with that, they will have finished the learning community and they will have a set of facilitators who are then equipped to go do this on their own. So it can become not a movement, but they can multiply it within their expression, because I just can't do it all. And I don't want people, I've given you so much now, you're really dangerous. You know, you'll run off and you'll try it. It may work, it may not work. You know, I don't know. And I want to be able to make sure people are going to go do these kinds of things. They do it right. But that the wave change idea too, I'm just so you know, if you hear about it, I'm trying to brand wave change as a way of using the learning community to do things versus just the learning community. That means so many things to so many people. So I guess the other side is, my last comment is, if you hear wave change, you know it's me. And if you really didn't like me today, you know not to go there, okay? So that's probably the big takeaway for this. Any last questions? This is my website. There is a, if you go to the website, there's a place you can contact me through email. If you come up with questions on anything, hey, I'm trying to do this, how does it work, or whatever, feel free to email me. I'll try to give you whatever advice I can. There are some books that were on the end of the outline. One I recommend to everybody, well, I recommend several, but Lateral Thinking by Edward de Bono, a British guy that talks about the way of thinking, and it's not a very linear process. Here's where we go. It's much more emergent and lets things happen. That'll give you a great idea of how to think through some of the things that happen in learning communities. And with that, I'm going to have to hit a bus here in a minute. And I got to tell you how much I appreciate you showing up on a, you know, it's not like you haven't had a lot of stuff going on this week. So I'm thankful for everybody being here. Thanks for your time.